So thank you, Michelle, and thank you, Michelle, and the other organisers for organising this. I've really enjoyed all of the talks so far, and I haven't been to many workshops where I think I've enjoyed all of the talks. So by way of an introduction, three will be important in this, playing a little on my Irish name. There is an idea in a lot of cultures that all good things come in threes. So apparently the Romans thought the same thing, and in Germany they still do. The Declaration of Independence promises the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. More or less the same idea, a little earlier. Perhaps the most famous example in Western culture. Not all trinities are quite as powerful. In general with these things, you have to be careful that you don't count the wrong number. This is a joke which, if you grew up when I did, is going to be immediately obvious. And if you didn't, don't worry. So, science. Spin ice is a good thing. Everybody agrees about that. If we have one spin liquid, well, where are the others? So the story I want to tell is not, unfortunately, that I've solved the minus sign problem and can now simulate this for whatever sign that I want to, but some motivation that if we take this problem, which we now understand quite well, and we change the sign here and use some other methods, we find a very, very rich phase diagram which has not one spin liquid, but in fact three, and as a bonus, some hidden spin pneumatic order. So that's what I'd like to tell you about. And to give credit where it's due, these are the people who made it happen. I think Owen and Ludo probably don't need much introduction in this room. So I'd like to highlight Mathieu, who did the MD simulations, which we'll be showing later, and quite a lot of the other work. And Han, who figured out the gauge theory on the aeroplane coming back from the APS meeting because he was kind of annoyed that we hadn't done it already. So where should we start? The minimal model of a quantum spin ice, well, we've seen this a lot of times already. I don't need to spend a lot of time explaining it. We have a term that wants to make spin ice, and we have a term that introduces dynamics on that. And we have some others which are a bit more complicated. Quite a few people have introduced this Hamiltonian in quite a few notations. Most of the time we are happy to talk about this. It does a lot of the things we're interested in, so we'll just get rid of those terms. And we'll start with that. And this is one of those happy cases where you get the sign that you want for the quantum Monte Carlo simulation, and you can figure out the phase diagram in some detail. There is a spin liquid. It's classical up here. It goes quantum at a somewhat lower energy scale. The photons live down here. And there is a competing easy plane antiferromagnetic order. And that's what you get. So we're all quite excited about this. What happens for the other sign? Well, your quantum Monte Carlo doesn't really work so well anymore, so you're not so happy about that. But we do know a few things. We know that the quantum spin ice ground state is perturbatively stable. As long as we don't mess up the gauge symmetry, basically we're okay. And in fact, in Mike Amela's paper, there's a little gauge transformation trick for changing the sign of this. So we know that the quantum spin liquid will work okay, at least perturbatively, for the other sign of interaction. And there's also been some slave particle type analysis which has looked at this and says, well, the spin-on dispersion changes a bit, you need to introduce a flux, but again, basically the spin liquid keeps going. So that's all good. What I'd like to suggest, humbly, is that classical simulations can be of help here in figuring out what's going on. Not as glamorous, perhaps, as some of the quantum methods, but quite informative. And to motivate that, well, here's what you find in classical Monte Carlo simulation of that Hamiltonian. Here's spin ice. It's got pinch points. Here's easy plane antiferromagnetic order. Correlations, well, this is much cheaper to calculate than this, but these temperatures, you get the same answer. Same ordered state. So all that's really changed is where the phase boundaries are. And in the classical case, well, if we went down to 10 to the minus 3, there'd be no quantum spin liquid anymore. But if we're working at these temperatures, actually, that doesn't make much difference. So qualitatively, I'm going to say identical. Quantitative differences, we'll come back to those. So what can we say about classical ground states as a general thing? Well, there's a trick that we've been using for a little while now of rewriting this Hamiltonian as a sum over tetrahedra of squares of Irraps. And if we do this keeping for a two-parameter space, so getting rid of this, we find that spin ice basically classically lives surrounded by competing forms of easy plane order. So this one we'd already seen, for example, in the quantum Monte Carlo, but there's two more. This is Parma-Chorca, and this has the same symmetry properties as spin ice, but it's an easy plane state, not an easy axis state. And here, surrounded by all these enemies, is spin ice. So our minimal model lives on this line here. And as you can see, that's exactly on the boundary between these two types of order on the frustrated sign of interaction. We'll come back to that. What do we expect at finite t? Well, if we live on this line, we've already seen it. There's an easy plane antiferromagnet. Classically, it lands there. So that's where the red and yellow meet. We're going to get spin ice, and we kind of expect that to keep going for the other sign of j plus minus. And then we have something which is quite interesting, where these three classical phases meet. In fact, the Hamiltonian is the Heisenberg antiferromagnet in disguise, which is to say, is the Heisenberg antiferromagnet, except that these spin operators here are tied to the local 1-1-1 axes and not to some global frame. So it's going to have all the same thermodynamic properties and, in fact, all the same excitations as the Heisenberg antiferromagnet, but they're all going to look different because when you come to calculate an experimental response, you need to remember the matrix that rotates you from the local frame into the global one. So we would guess that maybe this is a really high entropy spin liquid state that's going to grow out of that point, and then we really don't know what to expect over here. So what do we find? Well, this is the classical Monte Carlo simulation phase diagram produced by two notable French speakers. And it has three spin liquids, good things coming in three. Spin ice, one related to the Heisenberg model, another one that we'll come on to talk about. The first of these, spin ice, well, I mention this again partly because I want to show the comparison with the quantum Monte Carlo. And to explain this. So this is what pinch points look like for unpolarized neutrons in spin ice. This is spin ice resolved into the spin flip channel and the non-spin flip channel. Tom has made us all aware of the importance of this for seeing pinch points in spin ice. And this is what the simulations give here in this pure spin ice point. And if you did quantum Monte Carlo, you'd see the same things. This is the easy plane order. It's in fact the same family of order as is found in erbium titanate. And these are the phase boundaries found in quantum Monte Carlo simulation. So this is, I'm cheating slightly, this is classical Ising spin ice, but that lines up with this line. This is a crossover temperature. This is the Nao temperature from the quantum Monte Carlo. And what the quantum fluctuations have done is to, in fact, stabilize the ordered state, not the spin liquid, relative to the classical case. That might seem a little bit of a surprise, but it's true. And they've pushed the crossover temperature up to. And both of these things are kind of easy to understand, at least in a very crude sense. There's a convenient hockey stick. So in the classical case, the spins can fluctuate freely about these 1-1-1 axes, and will do so. And that brings all of these temperature scales down. In the quantum case, the fluctuations are quantized. So if you haven't got enough energy to make a monopole, you don't do it. That means that these temperature scales are higher, both the Nao temperature and the T star in the quantum case. Okay, I don't think anybody's bothered to simulate over here, but you could, and presumably these lines will meet somewhere over here. Let's get out of the way the other state, which is kind of known. So at this point here on the axis, the general spin ice model, or the rather the minimal one, reduces to a Heisenberg model. And this is what the SFQ looks like. Now, that looks weird and new and kind of interesting. And in some sense it is, but really it's just this in a rotated frame. So what's interesting about it, I think, is that people have been searching quite hard for a good spin half Heisenberg model in d-electrons and not finding it. And I think there are good chemistry reasons why they won't. In fact, you can work with one of these Kramer's doublets or another convenient doublet in an f-electron system and get Heisenberg model physics. You need either to fine-tune to this point or to be sufficiently high in temperature that it doesn't matter that you aren't fine-tuned to this point. So this suggests experimentally another strategy for measuring Heisenberg antiferromagnets. In fact, go for the anisotropic exchange route rather than the spin rotationally invariant route. It's probably chemically much, much easier to do it that way. Okay, so I'm not going to say a lot more about this, except to mention that there is a really, really long history in this problem, and the quantum limit is basically unfinished business. But the classical limit we understand quite well, and it's described by a U1 cross U1 cross U1 gauge theory, which you can think of as three copies of spin ice, one for each component of the spin, and in a large N expansion, that's exactly what it is, in fact. Okay, so on to the new spin liquid. So we've dealt with spin ice, we've dealt with our pseudo-Heisenberg model, and if we look at the structure factor over here, in this region, you'll see it's different from either of these. And you see it most clearly if you look in the spin-flip, non-spin-flip channels, that these are really quite different states. So we'd like to understand this better, and let's start with where it comes from. So I've already mentioned that this minimal model lives on a line, and that spin ice is surrounded by lots of different easy plane antiferromagnets. And in fact, that line coincides here with the boundary between these. So as is quite common in sort of classical frustrated magnetism problems, on that boundary there's an enlarged ground state manifold which interpolates between this form of easy plane order and this form of easy plane order. It has a big degeneracy. It has a bigger degeneracy than spin ice, in fact. And that's something that we can try to understand. So to be a little bit more specific, we have two IRAPs, one for each of these states. This is the Palmer-Chalker one. This is our spin ice but easy plane-like IRAP. And you can see that by construction, these are all X's and Y's. So they're all in the local easy plane. And we can try to then combine these to make some fields which satisfy a zero divergence condition. So in spin ice, that was easy. We just take the Z components, we count the number of in spins, we count the number of out spins, we get div B equals zero. Here you have to work a little bit harder, but there is a controlled way of doing it. And what you find is this. If you take this combination and this combination, they both satisfy that zero divergence condition. So this means that we can describe this manifold of states on this phase boundary using a gauge theory, or rather two copies of a U1 gauge theory. So the free energy is going to look somewhat like this. And we'll get pinch points in both of these fields following from this form of free energy. And if we have pinch points in these fields, in fact, that means there have to be pinch points in the original spins, because you can decompose the spin correlations in terms of B1 and B2. They're the only things which are fluctuating at low temperatures. So we're guaranteed pinch points just to convince you that the field theory works. This is the field theory. This essentially evaluated at finite size. This is a classical Monte Carlo simulation for a component of the structure factor for one of these B fields. And you can see the same pinch point in both. So now we understand why we have these slightly exotic singular structures here. They're telling us about a different form of gauge theory. U1, U1 cross U1 cross Q, U1 looks different, but it's really the Heisenberg model. And this one, which is new. Okay, so that's quite nice. Here's the added bonus feature. So if we look on our phase diagram, there's one area that we haven't talked about yet, which is labeled with a Q. And if we come down this axis, you'll see that we have one, two crossover temperatures and something which is in fact a phase transition. So if we look at the heat capacity coming down here, we find that at about 10 to the minus 2 JZ, there's a little anomaly, some entropy comes out. And when that happens, the spin correlations really don't change. So you can calculate this above the transition temperature, you can calculate it below, it looks the same, the pinch points are still there. So the system is ordering, but it's not ordering in a way which changes the spin correlations measurably, which is to say it's not a dipolar order. There is no Bragg peak associated with this transition. So what is going on? Well, I've mentioned this already, but we're living on this plane, on this line in between these two types of competing easy plane antiferromagnetic order. And so a natural thing to think about, if we have these components of spins to play with, is some sort of quadrupolar order parameter in the local easy plane. So this is one of my favorite order parameters. It's the same order parameter as for a spin pneumatic in field from condensation of two magnon bound states. And if you calculate what happens in your simulation, you see that at that temperature here, the quadrupolar order turns on. So the hidden order state is a quadrupolar or spin pneumatic state. So we understand that. Okay, what about spin excitations? Well, we've already seen that if you look in the dipolar channel, you can't see the order, and if you were able to look in the quadrupolar channel, you would. And we're going to get the same thing happening now with the dynamics. So we can't do the dynamics for the spin half quantum problem, sadly, but we can do molecular dynamics simulations starting from the classical Monte Carlo simulation. And what we find for the dynamical structure factor if we do this is the following. So you can see that, well, there's some things going on at high energy. But if we look around where the Bragg peaks would be in a quadrupolar susceptibility, or indeed anywhere else, we see something that we might easily, in an experiment, write off as some sort of incoherent background. There's just some inelastic scattering at low energies, and there's not much you can say about it. So there are any number of frustrated magnets that look a little bit like that at low energy. This really doesn't disperse very much at all. If, by magic, we could look at the quadrupolar susceptibility, this is what we would see. So suddenly, all of this cleans up. And if we look around the zone centers where the Bragg peaks of the spin pneumatic order would be, we see a linearly dispersing Goldstone mode, which is telling us about the fact that when the quadrupolar order forms in this easy plane, it's breaking the rotational symmetry around the local hard axis. So there has to be a Goldstone mode associated with that. And so far as the quadrupolar, the spin pneumatic order, is concerned, this is a relatively routine phase transition. These things fluctuate, at some temperature they order, then they get a Goldstone mode associated with the broken symmetry. If, however, you're stuck with looking at the spin correlations, they started algebraic, they stay algebraic, nothing much changes. So this is a very kind of canonical example of a hidden order state, such as people working on F electrons, I guess, have been wrestling with for a long time, for slightly different reasons. So what have we learned? We have learned that there's one spin liquid for the unfrustrated sign of interaction. In fact, there are three spin liquids for the frustrated sign of interaction. So that's good, because sooner or later, some material is going to land on this side of the phase diagram. And if we get lucky, maybe it will land somewhere near minus a half, and we'll finally have a spin half Heisenberg model to play with. And if you are a kind of stamp collector of gauge theories, you're happy because you already had a U1, you had a U1 cross U1 cross U1, and you needed a U1 cross U1 to complete the set. And there you go. There it is. What did we learn from experiment? Well, these are kind of unsubtle points, but pinch points do not imply spin ice. So if you measure pinch points, you don't have to fit any of our theories of quantum spin ice to it. In fact, you can let your imagination run free and suppose that it might be something else entirely that we haven't thought of yet. Spin liquids with algebraic spin correlations in general will have singular features in scattering, but there's more than one form of algebraic spin correlation that they could have. There's more than one kind of pinch point, there's more than one kind of spin liquid. And I've shown you three here today. And non-dispersing continua like this may hide many secrets. So I guess we're stuck with the fact that the neutron is a spin half particle and it's not going to resolve the quadrupolar features so gracefully. But in fact, this is not completely hopeless, because when you start a quadrupole moment spinning, dynamically it develops a dipole. So there is something you can see, it's just a much weaker signal than the one in the quadrupolar susceptibility. What's left? Well, quantum effects. I have not solved the minus sign problem. I can't show you quantum Monte Carlo simulation results, sadly, for all this. Certainly not with dynamics either. Spin nomadic order, well, we've talked about that in other orders. It's perfectly well posed for quantum as a quantum ground state of a problem. There's no reason why it shouldn't be a quantum ground state here. That's not an issue. The quantum limits of the gauge theories, well, it's unfinished business in the Heisenberg antiferromagnet spin half, and we're just revisiting that unfinished business here and motivating it from another point of view. So it's worth coming back to all of these problems and maybe thinking whether there are other approximation schemes or heroic Monte Carlo simulation efforts that we could make to try to learn something about the quantum effects on the other side. But so far as this talk is concerned, I'm just going to say that's an open problem. So the story is, take quantum spin ice, change the sign of J plus minus, or rather take the minimal model, change the sign of J plus minus, and straight away, three spin liquids and one hidden order state fall in your lap. And this conforms nicely to this dictum that seems to exist in so many different languages. So, thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Question? Colin.
What's the clearest of distinction between the spin liquid, the Serre and Heisenberg spin liquid, and the number two, I think you call it?
We weren't very imaginative from that point of view. We need to come up maybe with a better name for that. So what kind of distinction would you like?
Something in that I can go and measure.
Okay, well, I think you're not averse to neutron scattering, right? So here are the three predictions in terms of the neutron scattering.
That's total scattering, right?
This is total. This is spin flip, this is non-spin flip. If you're a spin ice aficionado, you immediately read that off, right? The non-spin flip is structureless, the spin flip has the pinch points. This is structureless plus pinch points, and then this is what you get in each of those, but assuming the same neutron polarization for a kind of reference. So this is matched up. We also matched up the color scheme as carefully as we could to Tom's well-known result. So these are different, this is measurable.
As I look at it from here, as it, the features are much sharper in SL2. I'm looking at the polarized. Yeah. As I would worry experimentally, you know, whether there could be some additional interactions that could confuse 2 and 3. So then,
if you cool it down and you get an ordering transition, you're in 2. Or if you cool it down and you get a crossover and the correlations change, then you started in 3, then you went into 2. If you cool it down and You get a crossover and the correlations change and they start to look like spin ice. You were here, and if you got really lucky, maybe you would be measuring a Heisenberg spin half Heisenberg antiferromagnet disguised as something else. So I don't think it's hopeless. This is as far as we've pushed the phenomenology, but that doesn't mean you can't go further. They're qualitatively quite different states, right, in terms of what the excitations are. These gauge theories have charges. So there are monopole analogues for each of these problems. They're a little bit harder to think about than just flipping one spin and having three out and one in, but they must exist. And so up here, where we probably are safe ignoring quantum effects, I feel like this phenomenology should be fairly robust and testable. At the lowest temperatures, and remember you have to go down to 10 to the minus 3, which is off the scale here, to see the quantum spin ice effects, then, okay, this was a classical simulation, you need to do something quantum.
Jeff? Does this sort of continue to the J plus minus?
Yeah, right. So this was the interesting bit of the line. And then I think it just keeps on going forever. And I think the quadrupolar order gets easier and easier to understand as you go further along that line.
Does that temperature get any higher?
Yeah, it does. Though I don't think we've really tried to estimate how high for infinity, but probably isn't going to be a material at infinity anyway.
Any questions?
It's getting on to dinner time.
What's that?
I said it's getting on to dinner time.
Okay, so if not, let's thank Nick for a very interesting talk.